Off the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. About 25 minutes into hour three, and day is whistled by, which I guess, you know, as many times we come here, and really not just here, but anytime we're traveling, it always flies by. Brad Free is going to join us, and we'll get a quick look from the weekend, probably tomorrow, Rich Migliori for some more New York recapping, but reached for Brad because they're racing at Del Mar today, don't forget. And there's actually a bunch of good things around the country. At Presque Isle today, you got another one of those $75,000 stake races. This is the Satin and Lace today. This goes at 6:25 Eastern. And there's a couple of familiar types in here, including Shug, sending the Stu Janney flatter mare Romantic Moment. How about this? Shug actually's got one other starter at, as it happens, this year at Presque, and the horse that caught my eye, Lance Stokes, has got Caramel Martini, which is something Tina would, I think, be very interested in. Caramel Martini is a 5-year-old Biondetti mare out of a Silver Deputy that is murder at Presque Isle. She's never missed the exacta in 6 tries, and 5 of them at the 3-quarter trip, and she's not the favorite. She's 5-1, Mario Pino aboard. Caramel Martini and Lance Stokes trains, and for Lonnie, who bred this mare. 5-1, that's my interest in here. Caramel Martini, we raise a glass to Brad Free out at Del Mar, as I guess we could almost say it's the start of closing week. It is, of course, a week from Labor Day. The summer has flown by. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's everything back in Kentucky this morning?
It very sedate, and let's keep it that way. It's so weird, Brad, though. I mean, to be here and to have this Oaks Derby weekend, you know, days away, and just, I mean, completely devoid of activity. That's what's so striking.
Well, it's been the same way everywhere. I mean, I feel the same thing at Del Mar. As anyone who's ever attended the races at Del Mar knows, it's the atmosphere as much as the racing. The racing in summer at Del Mar is usually very good. We see a lot of good two-year-olds. But this summer, with no fans in the stands, no socializing, it's been a completely different vibe where the turf meets the surf. And I guess that's, you know, coast to coast. It's the situation we're in right now. I guess the good news is we are going to have a Kentucky Derby this weekend, and we're going to have a Del Mar Futurity and Debutante down here at Del Mar on closing weekend. So we can be thankful for that.
Well, and a big weekend, no matter how you look at this. What is going to be fascinating is how the horse players deal with what is going to be an embarrassment of opportunities. And I mean, I guess we should be thankful that, you know, Oaks and Derby will be done by Saturday, because then we've got still Sunday and Monday to close out at Saratoga and Del Mar with things like you mentioned, the 2-year-old stakes. We've also got, of course, the Spinaway and Hopeful on our side of the country. You've got the Del Mar Derby and the John Maybe on Saturday. And this is going to be a very difficult decision-making, Brad, about where you're going to cast your lot. There's going to be a lot of interesting sequences coast to coast.
Well, and I think that's, in a way, it's a good thing. It's going to force players to make a decision and determine, you know, which races and or sequences offer the best opportunity. When there's only one racetrack running that you're interested in, you're kind of limited with your choices. But boy, this weekend, you know, you have the, like you said, the grade ones at Saratoga, we've got the grade ones down at Del Mar, the Oaks and the Derby. There's going to be plenty from which to choose, and you don't have to bet every single race. It gives us as horse players the luxury of picking and choosing where we believe there to be the most value.
Well, we're going to check with you about some opportunities at Del Mar today, the second of the two Monday makeup cards go back to the three-day weekend that was lost early in August. Let's take a look at the action that we just got through the last 3 days, and there were some interesting results. It's pretty funny going back to Friday, Brad, that you get a five horse field and somehow two of them managed to be together at the wire, a dead heat in the Tranquility Lake on Friday.
Yeah, that was a bizarre race. I mean, they ran to form virtually. I mean, the favorite finished third, a distant third, Hang a Star, but I believe that Proud Emma and Message figured to make the lead, and she figured to be tough if she was able to do that, and yes, she won. Proud Emma was stretching out off a good comeback sprint and figured to move up as she stretched out to two turns. They both ran well. The Tranquility Lake this year, you know, as most years, it's basically an allowance race. It gives these, you know, fillies and mares a chance to get some black type. It wasn't a really strong, solid race, but Proud Emma and Message, they hit the wire together, and that's kind of how they figured to run. Not that they figured to be in a dead heat, but they figured to be the two best horses in the race. The disappointment to me, it was Zusha, who's been running against graded stakes company, and she had a valid excuse for her most recent start, but she was cold in the betting throughout the action, and she ran accordingly. She got beat more than 10 lengths, disappointing fourth place finish. But yeah, Proud Emma and Message, dead heated on the wire, Mike Smith and Fabian Pratt, and it was, you know, kind of a forgettable stakes race, to be quite frank.
Let's press into Saturday, and there was a, before we talk about the Bing Crosby, there was a DQ in the fifth race, that maiden special in the turf sprint, Brad, and rarely out on the social media front do you get uniform agreement that a horse should have been taken down, but Letub, and nobody argued with that decision.
Yeah, well, Ruben Fuentes, you know, I think he was suspended. I believe he got a 7-day suspension.
Yes.
And the fact of the matter is, he got off light. That was one of the most blatant, horrible, dangerous rides that I have seen in some time. And you could see it coming. He was looking, and finally he said, screw it, I'm just going to go for it anyway. Plowed into a horse to the right, did it again in deep stretch, and was justifiably disqualified. And for Fuentes to get a 7-day suspension for putting multiple jockeys and horses' lives in danger, frankly, I thought he should have gotten at least a month for that. That was an embarrassment, and it was horrible. And yeah, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, because like you said, most everyone agrees with the disqualification. It was unfortunate for the connections of the horse, but Fuentes got off with a virtual slap on the wrist. It still infuriates me every time I think about that race. That was horrible.
Yeah, I think I saw from one comment from the champ, Mike Bacik, said specifically, if they don't take this horse down, I'm literally finished with this this game. Yeah, sometimes you see that and you just roll your eyes, but I think Bacik was serious about it. You had some solid maiden performances on the day, and that included Vittorio. This was a ghost zapper that went off at 6-5 for Simon Callahan. Got like a mid-70s fig, and I thought won pretty well.
Yeah, that was kind of an impressive win. And he was an easy horse to like by watching a replay of his career debut. He broke slowly. He made a middle move. He was wide. He ran well, finishing 5th of 9 in his debut, and he came back to work super after that. And he took a step forward like a good maiden is expected to do. And Vittorio showed a little bit more speed, more forwardly placed. And he crushed the field by more than 3 lengths. He earned a 73 buyer speed figure. He's a son of Ghost Zapper, and this is a nice colt. I think he has a lot of promise, moving forward for Simon Callahan and Kaleem Shaw. But you had to like the way that he won, and he won like a colt that's probably going to do even better as he stretches out in distance.
There was also a race worth mentioning, Jeff Mullins and Red Barons, Rancho Temescal, Craig Volk, that has made small incremental progress, Brad. And last year as a two-year-old, certainly seemed to be one of those juvenile turf type, in this case, fillies, that you were looking forward to as a three-year-old. There's been really a lot of good three-year-old fillies on the grass, and it feels like she's been just a touch disappointing. Mullins put the blinkers on, and that seemed to help. And Rispoli, helps whenever you put them on. And I don't know if this was a breakthrough, but she got a little bit of class relief coming out of the San Clemente and the honeymoon. And I've been kind of watching and waiting for her to take that next step forward.
Well, I think the class relief was virtually what led to her victory. I mean, she's been running in some tough spots.
Yes.
Ever since she arrived in the U.S. She's been running in nothing but graded stakes races for, I believe, her last 8 starts. She finally dropped into a one other van, and she won as best, and Rispoli gave her a great ride, and she got the class relief against a modest group. I tried to beat her the other day. It just turned out to be the wrong move to make. She got, sometimes these fillies who've been overmatched, you never know how they're going to quite respond when they do enter into a race that they can win, finally. You don't know if they're just going to run alongside horses or whether the class relief is going to produce the victorious effort, and that's exactly what happened. So the blinkers went on, the class dropped into a first level allowance race, and she won going away. So it'll be interesting to see what she can do now that she has a little bit of confidence under her belt. Maybe she goes back into a stakes race this fall at Santa Anita, and we'll see where she goes. But she's been running in some tough races, hitting the board multiple times in stakes races, but the one other van was perfectly within reach, and she got the money for Mullins and Rispoli.
I do have to mention one win from Saturday that was just kind of notable. It wasn't a special group per se, but there was an allowance, kind of an optional claiming allowance for high money, $80,000, the ones that were in for a tag, and that included Microthims that had been on the shelf for an extended period, the 6-year-old, and David Israel, second off the layoff and now second win of the meet for this Algorithms Gelding, and maybe David will celebrate by finally publishing that book we've been waiting for like 4 years.
Well, I'll tell you what, this guy earned his victory, Microrhythms did, because he was under severe pace pressure every step of the way after breaking from the rail. He went 21-4, 45 flat, hounded every step of the way, shook off his pace rival, Little Juanito, who finished second to last. At the quarter pole, it looked like Desert Law could not lose the race. Juan Hernandez is sitting on top of Desert Law, just off the pace, wide, while Microrhythms taking all the pace pressure. And then when push came to shove in deep stretch, Microrhythms said, ah, heck with it, I'm just going to scamper away. And he won by a length and a half. He earned a 96 buyer speed figure. He was running for the optional $80,000 claim tag, no takers. And he won, that was a good, solid win, his 5th win from 8 starts. He's a 6-year-old gelding. He's obviously had problems along the way. You don't see too many 6-year-olds that are racing with only 8 career starts. five of them wins, and that was he earned this win going 5.5, and it was a very impressive allowance win.
Let's turn to the Bing Crosby, and I know everybody loves to hate on Peter Miller, and you know CZ Rocket claimed for $50,000, and when you look at the way in which he's approached CZ Rocket, Brad, it's not like he took him for 50 and put him in grade ones. He took him for 50 and then ran him back for 50. Then he ran him in an optional. Then he ran him in a rich optional and next level allowance, and then tried him in a stake. People just take shots left and right at Peter Miller, but it does feel like he's kind of rebuilding CZ Rocket steadily, and he's just running mid-90s buyers. I don't know if this is the horse that people want to be attacking Peter Miller over.
Well, CZ Rocket went into the Pat O'Brien 7-furlong race on Saturday with the best speed figures in the field, and the question was, could he reproduce those Midwest buyer speed figures in the mid-90s in California? He had a nice workout over the Del Mar racetrack, and turns out that he did. He won. He earned another mid-90s buyer. In fact, he got a 97 win in the Pat O'Brien. The funny thing to me, this is a horse that I completely forgot about until after the race, and I was reminded. CZ Rocket won the first three starts of his career and actually ran in the Grade 1 Malibu at Santa Anita on opening day a few years ago as a three-year-old in late December. He finished nowhere, but this is a horse that has always had a touch of class. He was claimed for 40 in April at Oakland, and like you said, Miller ran him back for a tag. Anybody could have reached in and got him again, but he's returned to top form. He's now won 8 of 21. He went off as the even money favorite, and that to me, I'll tell you what, you talk about a late odd switch. I mean, I don't think that CZ Rocket was favored at any stage of the betting. I could be wrong on that. And then next thing you know, when the gates open, he's the even money favorite. So he ran to the action. He ran to his speed figures. Flagstaff, the runner-up, fired and ran his race, but he was second best. And CZ Rocket won the race. Good, solid win by a good, solid gelding against a good, solid field. It was not the same quality of sprinters that we saw early in the meet in the Bing Crosby. Generally speaking, the Pat O'Brien for 7 furlongs is a grade 2, grade 3-ish caliber type of race. It was again this year. CZ Rocket was a deserving winner. He ran to his numbers, and he got the money.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't, he's not a Breeders' Cup sprint, type level. But I have no qualm with the way in which Miller has gone about, employing him in this little win streak that he's built up. The next question, you and I talked a few weeks ago about the multi-race wager scenario that the computer-assisted wagering groups is authoring. And Brad, I started the show by mentioning the $750,000 pool scoop last night on that late pick five. $983,800 bet in. And $750,793 taken out. There was also a $44,800 pick four. Talk about yesterday's just series of fireworks.
Well, I mean, I don't know what happened this weekend. I mean, you talk about. Fortunately, I'm not the only one. I mean, I was clueless. I had some bad opinions all the way through. And what happened yesterday, I mean, I'm still kind of scratching my head. Yeah, you can see natural history winning race number 7 in a race that set up perfectly for his closing style. They went fast early. The speed fell apart. Espinoza gave natural history a good ride, and he won the race at $15. But then it got weird. Hoop Dream, who'd shown very little. Trainer David Bernstein has been a top. He's been a good trainer over the years. He doesn't have the stock he once did. Hoop Dream, I have a hard time making a case for him even after the fact. 31-1, and he won at $64. Tilted Towers, well, he's a confident sharp turf sprinter who obviously likes the Del Mar turf course. And trainer Phil D'Amato is about as hot as you can get. Tilted Towers was not supposed to be fast enough to win this allowance optional claimer, and he just kept his win streak alive and won again at 38 bucks. And then you go, Governor Got Even, second choice in the generous portion, coming off a win last time out. She was, you know, at least made some sense. I'm So Anna, who had missed a start early in the meet, she just was short, I think. And Governor Got Even won by four lengths, but then you go into the finale, and, you know, it was a wide-open maiden filly mare turf route scramble. You could make a case for a number of horses, and Froze got the money at $35. It was a very difficult sequence to string together, but somebody was able to do that and walked away with $750,000. Not bad for stringing together five straight winners on a 50-cent wager. So it was one of those sequences that, you know, I'm never going to have. Most people are not. Somebody got lucky somewhere, and, you know, more power to them.
Do we know? I haven't checked the nightly release. A lot of times they've done a great job at Del Mar, Mac McBride and the team, of giving us an idea of where these, you know, wins have come from. And wasn't sure if there was any details that have been, you know, disseminated.
Yeah, I have not heard yet where the bet was made. Who knows? I hope it was somebody, you know, I hope it was a small $12, $24 ticket that got lucky. I doubt that was the case, but I have not heard yet where that winning ticket was purchased, but that we'll be monitoring that closely.
Yeah, now that'll come. That gets us, we don't have to really go into anything else from last night, but it does get us to today's action, Brad, and a 9-race card that's going to start at 5 o'clock. And so late afternoon after work for most of us on the eastern half of the country, you got a chance to play. And there's a first-level allowance going a mile and a 16th for 3-year-olds on the grass. This is a good feature. And there's a few players in here that kind of caught my eye. How about a few highlights off of this card?
Well, sure. I mean, we could start with the feature race. It's race number 8. It's the one other than for 3-year-olds. And I took a little bit of a shot in here with a horse by the name of A Journey to Freedom, who is now trained by Peter Miller. Blinkers off. He's been gelded since his most recent start. And his third-place finish in the Oceanside Stakes on opening day is, in my opinion, it's good enough to win this race. A Journey from Freedom is listed at 8-1 on the morning line. I don't think that's going to happen. I can see him getting bet in half. He's a gelding. He's blinkers off. He's first-time Miller. And I can see A Journey to Freedom, you know, being bet down from that morning line. He's entered for the optional $80,000 claim tag because he already has won this condition. And so we're going to see if A Journey to Freedom can improve. First start for Miller, he'll have to beat a horse that comes off a very decisive starter allowance win last time out. Horse by the name of Scardo, trained by Mike Pipey, number 2 Scardo, the 3-1 favorite on the morning line. You don't see too many horses win off by more than 3 lengths on the Del Mar turf course. And Scardo did it. It was a starter allowance, but it was against older horses. And this guy, he's turned a corner. He stretched out for the first time. Scardo did last out, and he won nicely. If you go by just strictly off thoroughgraph numbers, Scardo will win again, because he earned a 7 last time out. A Journey to Freedom earned an 8.75, I believe, in the Oceanside. Scardo is sharp. He's good. He's facing 3-year-olds only, and he is a contender. But I think that A Journey to Freedom has a right to improve, and he won't need to improve all that much to spring an upset. It's something less than 8-1 on the morning line.
I don't know if he can win going wire to wire like he did. He didn't win. He got beat in the last jump. But if Tripoli can rate a little bit, I thought that 6-1 I was interested a little bit. And kind of, I haven't looked yet at Toby Terrell or Andy Harrington's clocker notes, but this is a bettable, to say the least, a bettable bunch.
It is a bettable bunch. I mean, you got a big field of 10, and you can make a case for a number of them. Tripoli, I thought that he got highly advantageous conditions last time out. He went to half in 48-1, three quarters in 12-4, and he got worn down late. I don't know that he's going to get that same type of trip again today. It looks like there's a little bit more speed in here. Not that he can't come from behind, because he won a turf sprint three starts back rallying from behind, but he had super easy and a very easy trip last time out. He ran well under ideal conditions that I don't think are going to be replicated today. The horse that's kind of interesting to me, and I don't know what to do with, is number 7, Mecklenburg. He also is trained by Mike Pipe. He had a ton of trouble in his U.S. debut. He broke slowly. He got rank. It was kind of a throwout race, and yet he finished 4th in a 6-horse field, beaten only 2 lengths. He's lightly raced. That was his first start in the U.S., his first start since January in Ireland. And Mecklenburg, he has a license to improve because he's only started 3 times and only once in the U.S. So, again, he's a horse I don't know what to do with. And those are the horses that drive me crazy. I want to have an opinion on a horse, but he's a horse that I don't know if he's good, I don't know if he's bad. Everything that Little Red Feather is sending out these days seems to be running very, very well. But I think that Pipey's best chance in this race is probably Scardo, but you got to take a look at Mecklenburg on the potential to improve.
Well, and we're going to have to... This is a horse that must have been a private purchase, so I don't know why somebody in Ireland is naming a horse after something in North Carolina, but of course people in North Carolina can't bet, so no hunch players in Charlotte for Mecklenburg today.
Exactly.
Couple of other spots, Brad. What else do you like on this card?
Well, I mean, I like the favorite in the opener, so I'm not going to be real creative in race number 1. I like the 2-1 favorite on the morning line, and that's number 6, Lil Richard's Bellow. Third start of his career, and he catches what appears to be a relatively nondescript bunch of older cowbreds on the main track. His debut 2 starts back was a 3rd-place finish, and he ran very well that day. And then trainer Pete Yurden put him on grass last time out, and the experiment pretty much backfired. He broke slowly, kind of split the field, but he's back on the main track today in race number 1. Not a whole lot of depth to this cowbred maiden field. Rispoli rides him back, and he's drawn near the outside. So unless, the first-time starter, Rickery, on the outside, comes up hot in the betting. And by the way, Richard Baltus is doing a lot better with first-time starters than he once did. But I think the Little Richard's Bellow, number 6, he's the 2-1 favorite in the opener. I'm just going to single him right off the bat and, sink or swim with the favorite in race number 1.
A very attractive Monday proposition, and I don't know if he starts today or if he starts later in the week, but John Leese with Larry Colmus headed to Louisville for responsibilities. John Leese will be calling the races to close out the season at Del Mar.
And looking forward to that. I think that Larry Colmus does call today, if I'm not mistaken, and I believe that John Leese will call the races Friday through Monday. You talk about one of the hardest working guys in the business, and an excellent handicapper, and one of the best on-track analysts anywhere in the country, John Lees is. So he's getting the opportunity that is long overdue, and I'm looking forward to hearing John Lees call the races on closing week. But I got to say this, I'm not the biggest Larry Colmus fan, but I have changed my tune this summer. I thought that Colmus did an outstanding job for much of the summer at Del Mar, and I think that it's clear to me now, listening to him on a day-in, day-out basis, why many people on the East Coast are in Colmus's corner. I thought he did a terrific job all summer long, and it's tough shoes to fill coming in for Trevor Denman, but Colmus did a good job all summer long. Looking forward to hearing John Lees call the races on closing weekend.
And we got our first chances, actually, during the pandemic to get John on the show. And that, as part of his responsibilities, calling Will Rogers Downs. And, you know, one thing he also has that I think that some people might appreciate. Some people seem to interpret it as you know, overly sedate, but he's got a very soothing voice. He's, you know, you're not going to have any Kramer-esque spasms listening to John Lee's.
No, you're not going to have any of those spasms. And he does have a soothing voice. But I will say this, you know, as an on-air broadcaster, a paddock commentator, you know, you have to be politically correct. Let me tell you something about John Lee's. John is an opinionated, sharp, accurate handicapper. And I think that sometimes he kind of tones it down a little bit due to the situation that he's in. But John Lees is a guy that I enjoy sharing opinions with because he is a sharp dude. And looking forward to hearing him call the races. I know that he's a terrific handicapper and good on-track analyst.
Brad Free with us, and we just got a couple of minutes to close out this first day at Churchill Downs. And Brad, not going to let you go without an opportunity to get some thoughts into Derby Week and Oaks, and of course a you know, predictably strong contingent of West Coast players on their way. In fact, right now the plane from California will be coming here. And when we look at the Derby participants, Honor AP, who had kind of a public final workout preparing for the assignment, 1,000 words, continues to thrive down there and breathe new life into his three-year-old season. And then there's Authentic, then there's Gamine and Speech in the girls' race. Some overview going into Oaks and Derby from you.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about the Kentucky Derby, I mean, it's all about the favorite. Apparently, Tis the Law has already won the race, and they've already sent him the trophy. He's the deserving favorite, but we've seen a lot of things can happen in a large field in the Kentucky Derby. I'm not sure that taking a short price on Tis the Law is the way to go from a betting perspective. Other people may disagree and say, well, you know, look, it's a large field. We'll just concede the race to the favorite and, you know, try to hit an exacta or trifecta or superfecta or something like that. I'm going to wait until the draw before I, you know, make a final decision. Look, I respect the California horses. Honor AP, he finished second in the Shared Belief. That does not bother me one bit. It was only a spin around the track, just a segue into September at Churchill Downs. He has worked very well for his, you know, for the Kentucky Derby. He's worked well the other day at Del Mar. So I would expect Honor AP will probably run the best race of his career, and then it's just going to be a whether or not that's good enough to defeat a legitimate favorite in Tis the Law. Authentic, I'm not sure if a mile and a quarter is really, you know, going to be in his wheelhouse, but he's a key contender in the Derby because he's going to be one of the ones that's going to determine how the race unfolds, how fast they go early. Authentic is a fast horse. I'm sure that they're going to let this guy use his speed and see if a Son of Into Mischief can carry his speed a mile and one quarter. So Honor AP and Authentic are the two, you know, the best ones from California. 1,000 words, you know, a few months ago, he looked like he might be the one from California to represent in the Kentucky Derby. He did return to form in his last couple starts, runner-up in the Los Al Derby, and then he defeated Honor AP last time out. But I don't know that he's really taken as much of a forward move as you might expect from a developing three-year-old. He earned back-to-back 3 3/4 and 3 1/4 on Thoroughgraph. That's virtually the same number that he got last fall in the Los Alamitos Futurity. So I suspect, and I could be wrong, but I suspect that 1,000 words might be just a cut below. As far as the Kentucky Oaks goes, I mean, anybody who's watched Gamine in her last couple starts, she is absolutely freaky. She's stretching out to two turns for the first time, or not for the first time, but stretching back out to two turns off of a pair of dominating wins And if she can carry her speed, you know, a mile and one-eighth, Swiss Skydiver is going to have her work cut out for her. But it's a heck of a showdown between a couple of very good fillies, Swiss Skydiver and Gamine. The filly that I'm most interested in, and I have to admit that I'm being very selfish because she happens to be on my fantasy team, but that's Brad Cox-trained She Dares the Devil, a daughter of Dare the Devil, who has gotten progressively faster as the season has unfolded. And she won her last two starts decisively. One of them was an allowance race, and one of them was a grade three at Indiana, but she won by six and by five lengths. She has tactical speed. She doesn't require the lead. And to me, she is coming up to a potentially odds-beating effort. Is she good enough to defeat Swiss Skydiver and Gamine? Probably not, but she is hitting the Kentucky Oaks at the top of her game, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how She Dares the Devil stacks up with the cream of the division.
Well, looking forward to the full Derby Oaks analysis package at the Daily Racing Forum, and that'll include Brad's takes as well. And there's quite a few West Coast horses we're going to talk about. We'll probably reach out to Gary Young as well, because Tayshan and Rushy are in the Pathé Mile, Smooth Like Straight in the American Turf for McCarthy as well. McCarthy could have a very big weekend here. He's also got CC that's going to run either in the Derby City Distaff for the La Troyenne. Bowie's Hero is coming for the Turf Classic. The Motto with Beguiled. There's a bunch of West Coast horses, and I'm sure they're coming with intent. Brad Free, always spectacular. Thanks so much.
Good luck, Steve. I'll talk to you soon.
Brad Free, everybody. Second to none. Brad Free, the Oak Straw today. Miguel Silva, Joe Bianca, and Mike Trombetta. Day one in the books from Churchill. We'll have the full Oaks card to start to peruse, plus more recapping, probably MIG tomorrow as well, to recap the rest of Saratoga and look ahead to closing week, and a lot more. We'll start to get some local voices in here too, maybe Marty. Not as many local voices and people on hand, but we'll cycle them through. We'll also get to the Twin Spires team, I'm sure, as well as the days unfold. From Churchill Downs, thanks, everybody. Good luck today. Lots of good action. Talk to you in the morning here at Sirius XM at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph.